Are we ready and present?
Yes. Willing and able.
All here. Are we all breathing?
Better be.
Now, my question is, who's in charge of your breathing?
Not me.
You can visualize, if you want to, that you're not in charge. It's God breathing you.
Mm-hmm. So it's your autonomic nervous system.
Your nervous system's breathing you. Well, that's God. Your nervous system's God breathing you. We'll visualize God breathing us as we allow God to breathe three deep breaths. And allowing God to give us a deep breath. Here we are again. Yoga of Action, the Bhagavad Gita, the Song of the Lord. We're going to begin with another exercise. You may have heard me repeat this verse before. It comes from the Tao Te Ching. Tao Te Ching. So I'll put it up on the board and I'll repeat it once, then we can repeat it together. I have just three things to teach: simplicity, patience, compassion. These three are your greatest treasures. Simple in action and in thoughts, you return to the source of being. Shall we repeat this together? I have just three things to teach: simplicity, patience, compassion. These three are your greatest treasures. Simple in action and in thoughts, you return to the source of being. What is the source of our being? Source of being has many names, doesn't it? Our divine your divinity, which Ross talked about today, our Christ consciousness. In the yoga tradition, it would be the capital S self. S-E-L-F. Simple in action and in thoughts, you return to the source of being. What does it look like when we're not simple in thoughts? What's that like? What's it like when we're not simple in thought?
Scattered, anxious.
Worried about the future, I guess. Overthinking.
Worrying.
You're blocking the source.
Blocking the source.
Confused sometimes.
Feeling confused. Simple in action and in thoughts, you return to the source of being. It's good to hear that we ought to be simple in thoughts. The question is, In the midst of our complicated thoughts, how do we return? What steps can we take? What practices can we draw upon to return to simplicity in thought, which then results in simplicity of action?
Intentional breathing.
Intentional breathing. Noticing the breath.
Which is something I never do.
Even if we never do it,
yeah.
Just to know
you can do it.
That, oh, I ought to do that.
Yeah.
Just remembering I ought to, even though we've never done it, is a good step. So there's a part of us that knows how to return to simplicity. What are some other ways to return to simplicity of thought besides conscious breathing?
Sometimes I think it's going to a feeling. Like there are certain things that just feel like truth, and there are things that tend to be consistent in lots of different thought processes. And you know, if you can just sit there and sit with it, you can sort of pick out the truth, which makes it more simple, I think.
What I'm hearing beneath that, Susan, is that another way to return to simplicity of thoughts is to get in touch with whatever we're feeling right now. Right, Sam?
Yep.
Get in touch and say, oh, I'm feeling upset about something. I'm feeling anxious or fearful about something.
I felt that last night. I was driving in that horrible rain up to Maryland. And I got to the point where my heart was just pounding and I had to just slow my breathing down at times because it was, you know, hard to see. It was frightening.
Were you able to slow your breathing down?
Yes, at times, especially when the traffic stopped.
Great. So that's a spiritual practice. Slowing your breathing down, being conscious of your breathing, and noticing what feeling it is that you're having. When you notice what feeling you're having, you could also choose to couch that in this way. Ah, okay, Steve, you're not having the feeling. No, your mind is having the feeling. It's your mind, Steve, that's having the feeling. Not you. You are the eternal capitalist self, which is always in peace. Always in peace. Always in peace. And from your eternal capitalist self, which is always in peace, you can observe. Oh, the mind is upset. Well, the mind is doing its job. Its job is to get upset when certain things happen. So, God bless it, it's all upset, and I'm grateful I have such an accomplished mind that can get upset when it's appropriate, and okay, I'll be with that. And then breathe through that. You can never be upset. Your mind gets upset from time to time. And it's your mind where you also experience fear. Oh, my mind is getting afraid, sending out messages to my arms and legs to run and to speak out. The mind is feeling angry. Mind is again sending messages out to do this, do that. I have a mind. It's not who I am. Simple in action and in thoughts. So returning to that simplicity of thought that I am capital S self, the Christ consciousness, which is always at peace, and my mind does what it does. That's simple in thought. So your mind might be having some complex thoughts. You can always choose to return to look at those thoughts from simplicity. Simple in action. When you're simple in thought, you'll naturally be simple in action. Jan had the idea to return to her breathing when she got upset and fearful with Lorraine. And after she thought, oh, I ought to slow my breathing down and be conscious of it, I'm guessing the result was your actions were also simple. You just drove. Didn't do anything panicky, is that right?
Yes.
I have just three things to teach: simplicity, patience, compassion. Patient with both friends and enemies, you accord with the way things are, as opposed to the way we wish they could be or not be. Compassionate toward yourself, you reconcile all beings in the world. Shall we repeat this together?
Patient
with both friends
and
enemies, you accord with the way things are.
Compassionate toward yourself, you reconcile
all beings in the world. Patient with both friends and enemies, you accord with the way things are. Again, we need to look at what the opposite of patience is. So when you're not patient with friends, what does that look like? Friend does something and you feel impatient. What does that look like? Willfulness?
Yeah.
Hurry up, let's get moving. Taking too long. I need to get out of here.
That's
What's your problem?
Yeah, that's me too.
My God, I remember my children. What are you doing up there?
Yeah.
Hurry up.
The bus is waiting for you.
I'm ready. Why aren't you? So when we're not patient, we're not according with the way things are. Actually, we become unaware of the way things are. Maybe the children are doing their best to get ready on time. Or maybe your friend with whom you're impatient has an issue that you're blinded to. And maybe your friend wishes so much that you would acknowledge the issue that's bothering them. Mm. Wishes that you would be open so they would feel comfortable to share with you the issue that they want to share with a friend. And you are the friend with whom they wish to share the issue. And they see you are impatient and so feel shut down. Patient with friends, you accord with the way things are.
That takes you back to the breath again.
The breath, being present.
I can often remember, you know, being in a situation and saying, patience, you know, calm down, patience.
Take it easy.
And so you're, you know, you look patient, and on the inside you go, which is really stressful. So that's where the breath comes in.
Well, Susan, that brings up the second part of this. Patient with both, oh no, I thought it was going to be patient with ourselves. Patient with enemies. Let's do patience with ourselves. To me, that's another aspect of this. It's not there. Patient with ourselves. What does it look like when we're not patient with ourselves? What does that look like? You gave an example.
It's a reminder, because we're in a succeed kind of a situation. We're in a hurry. We're to slow it down, bring it back, ground it.
Patient with ourselves.
Yes, and okay, I understand why this is happening, but you bring it back, because it's not going to do you any good to be all agitated and anxious.
So you get in accord with the way things are. You're agitated, you're anxious, that's the way things are, but perhaps through breath, you're patient with yourself. The agitation or anxiety may not go away, but I choose to be patient with my own anxiety and my own, and noticing perhaps, well, it's not me anyway, it's just my mind. That's all.
And as Jan says, the heart. It's jumping right in there.
Yeah. So when the mind gets upset, it controls a lot of different parts of the body. It sends messages down the heart, hurry up, beat fast, maybe even breathe fast. Patient with enemies. What does it look like when we're impatient with enemies? Maybe we don't have any enemies. People with whom we are in discord. People with whom we're not in harmony. What does it look like when we're impatient with someone with whom we're feeling a lack of harmony, a lack of similar energy?
I'm using my judgmental thinking, which is non-productive. Or I want to fix. Like, I've got the solution, right? I'm in that mentality of I've got to go ahead and fix this. Right? And just recognizing that is the first step.
I'm so smart. I have all this ability.
I've got the right answer.
All
my instructions, right?
I've been taking classes and courses.
Says.
I
read books
about
it. I tell others about it. Now it's my job to fix this person. Patient with enemies, you accord with the way things are. You accord with the way they are. And open your eyes to the way that person with whom you're not sharing harmony is. And you can take a deep breath, and when you are patient with the way things are in someone else, which is the way things are, you can go there to the next one, compassionate for them. Well, it starts up here, compassionate toward yourself. If we're not compassionate toward ourselves, we may find it difficult to be compassionate towards anyone else. What does it look like when we are not compassionate towards ourselves, not loving ourselves? What is that? How does that show up?
That anger, that's like, I keep going back to anger and judgment and resentment and all the negative feelings that we hold toward other people that we judge does nothing but injure ourselves. So letting go somehow or another of those feelings is being compassionate towards yourself. It has nothing to do with the other person.
Yes. So ask yourself this question now. Am I able to say, I love myself? And when you say that to yourself, I love myself, what is it that comes up for you that you don't love about yourself? Does anything come up for you that you don't love about yourself? Maybe when you were a kid, someone said, you're stupid. You're too skinny.
You're too fat.
I don't like the color of your hair. Maybe you internalize that as a young person, because young people often do that. Young people want to be loved and respected. So sometimes as a young person we'll internalize that thought. So that later on in life, as we're learning to be more compassionate towards ourselves, when we say, I love myself, those old memories show up. Of when you decided you weren't good enough, there's something wrong about you. That gets in the way of you loving yourself now. How do you deal with that? And there's some aspect of yourself, and you don't want to tell anybody about this, of course, would they found out that this is wrong with you? No, you've been hiding this for all your adult life. You don't want anyone to know that you're too skinny or too fat or have the wrong hair color or had the wrong mother and father. No, you keep it to yourself. What can we do to become more compassionate towards ourselves, having the result that we can reconcile ourselves, all beings in the world?
I was telling Susan that there was an excellent article by Maureen Dowd in the New York Times last week. Did you read it?
No.
She's, a liberal columnist, and her family is very conservative. And her first brother, they were sort of on the outs from some things she had written during the election in 2016, and then he died. And she was writing about missing him and never having reconciled these differences. And then she had a second brother who she was going to go to Monument Valley with, and they had made all these plans and everything. But her sister, he amazingly was a coach for Brett Kavanaugh at Georgetown Prep. He didn't want to hear anything bad about Kavanaugh or anything. And of course she was on the other end of things, but they sort of reconciled enough to take their trip, and she was able to listen to him and, you know, and his thinking. But at the end she just sort of said, you know, we lose our families if we don't do this. It's an excellent article.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
Very bittersweet. She went back to regretting what she had reconciled with her first brother.
Yes.
Before he died.
It comes back to what love really is, which is, first of all, respect.
Yeah.
Having a sense of respect towards the other person so that you can respect who they are. Reconciling yourself to all beings. Respect. You may not agree, but can you be the person who listens to what they wish to say with respect? You may not respect the things they
right.
say or the concepts, but can you respect the person who is saying these things? Respect. Compassionate toward yourself when you have these areas that get in the way of loving yourself. What are some spiritual techniques for dealing with those thoughts that are embedded in your consciousness, been there for a long time? What are spiritual techniques? Spiritual techniques for that thought that comes up, oh, I'm ugly. Or, I'm beautiful. Maybe you want to free yourself from all of those dualities. One spiritual technique is just to notice that those are thoughts in your mind. That's a thought, and it's been there a long, long time. It's sort of buried in my heart, and my heart delivers it to my mind inadvertently when I'm least expecting it. I don't feel good when it happens. Well, it's a spiritual technique to just notice that the thought was buried in your heart, something inadvertent happened, it came up, went in your mind, and you reacted with that old feeling of upset or sadness. And notice, ah, there's my old friend.
Mm-hmm.
There's my old friend. Where is it? In my mind. Thank you, God, for my beautiful mind. I wonder, God, now that this thought has shown up in my beautiful mind, what is there for me to learn here that I am not seeing? What is there here for me to know that I'm not knowing? I wonder what there is, because I know deep inside me it's all for good. So how is this negative thing somehow coming up for my benefit? Where in my spiritual path do I need to work a little bit? Well, first I'm noticing this is not who I am, really. I'm not ugly, I'm not even beautiful, I just am. I'm not too tall, I'm not too short. I don't have to wear high heels to be taller, but I don't want to. I'm just who I am. And I have those thoughts in my mind. Thank you, God, for my thoughts. They're just my thoughts, they're not who I am. So you see how that's compassion towards yourself? Just noticing your thoughts. Compassion. Compassionate toward yourself. You open yourselves up now, you're no longer closed, to reconcile all beings in the world. You become a source of light for all beings in the world to reconcile themselves as you will reconcile them. Compassionate. You reconcile. You're the light of reconciliation. Because you reconcile, you're reconciling. You're always in the process of reconciling your own stuff. Now, whether or not you truly reconcile those negative thoughts, never mind. Your mind has a mind of its own. It's going to continue doing what it does. Can you always choose to be in the process of reconciling by noticing, being grateful for your mind, noticing that there may be something here for you to know that you don't know yet, and then going back to the second idea here, being patient with yourself. It's hard for me to be compassionate towards myself. Well, I'm going to be patient myself as I open myself up to be compassionate for me.
And if you notice those thoughts, your mind doesn't have to keep smacking you in the face with them all day long, every day, in order for you to know. You might as well just go ahead and notice them and work with them.
It's interesting. Sometimes I get upset about things, and I notice my upsets often last quite a long time. My mind just goes over and over and over.
Mm-hmm.
And I do these techniques. I notice, well, it's my mind that's upset, not me. And my mind says, tough, I'm still upset about this, and I'm going to talk about it some more.
Mm-hmm.
Goes back and talks about it some more.
What do you do then?
I continue noticing that it's in my mind, it's not who I am, and my mind is having the upset, not me. And my mind says, well, you can think that if you want, but I'm upset, and I'm going to go over this story one more time.
Keep watching.
Here's what you should do.
The reruns.
Next time you get with that person, let's go over again what you're planning on doing. You're going to say this, and you're not going to say that.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to do this, and you're not going to do that. Okay, got it? I got it. Okay. Thank you for sharing my mind. I'm done. No, you're not. When you see that person the next time, this is...
Yeah, but you're hoping. I keep hoping that it's up or further up on the spiral.
To be in the process is our enlightenment.
Yeah.
Got it? To be committed to the process, not to be committed to it working.
Big difference, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm committed to the process, but I'm open for any results. I have a right to my actions, but never to my actions fruits. I'm committed to being in the process, and then whatever shows up, I'm open for that as well, which is another reminder of back to the process. Mm-hmm. So the process may not work, and yet the purpose of the process is not really to work, it's to be in the process. I have a little lesson we can go into now, as if this were enough. Any other questions before we... So what are your three treasures?
Patience.
Simplicity?
Simplicity.
Patience.
Patience.
Okay, let's do it again. What are your three treasures?
Simplicity,
patience,
and compassion.
Those are your three treasures. Often when my mind is doing stories and getting upset and going over this again and again and again, that's something I will remind myself of. Mm. My three treasures are simplicity, patience, compassion. And then I will naturally start to apply that to this ongoing story my mind wants to keep repeating. Let's see. Simplicity. What's going on there? Patience. Well, maybe I need to be patient and just let the story keep playing. Compassion. Yeah, I just need to be compassionate towards my mind. It's sort of programmed like this. I still love it. Even though it's going on and on. I'm just going to not look at it from a complicated standpoint. Just be simple. It's doing its thing. I'm patient with it. I still love it. But then I'm also committed to this process of noticing it. So.
I love the fact that it says compassionate towards yourself, because often when you get compassionate towards somebody else, you can just go right into that story. And that's sometimes not helpful.
Yes, we have contrary minds. Our minds, my mind was designed to be contrary. I don't know about yours. My mind is so, yes, I see someone else, say, oh, I should be compassionate towards them. My mind reminds me of all the things about them I don't like, and the ways they're acting, I wish they wouldn't act.
And then, like Sam says, you want to get in there and fix them.
Because
they really, really need fixing.
They're on the wrong path. They need some help.
They're really floundering.
So it's interesting when we think we ought to be compassionate towards others. The verser says, well, I need to be compassionate towards myself first. And from that light, I can reconcile. Mm-hmm. All beings in the world. Not fix them, but come into a state of harmony, reconciliation with all beings. Well, we come here and hear all these things. Maybe a little bit will stick to us, maybe not. Shall we go on? Here's a verse from the Bhagavad Gita. A wise person will not disturb the mind of an unwise person who is still attached to the fruits of his or her actions. We've just been talking about this. A wise person. A wise person is more focused on being compassionate towards herself. and is comfortable not disturbing the mind of an unwise person who is still attached to the fruits of his or her actions, but by continuously performing perfect, meaning selfless, actions, the wise person influences others in all they do. Selfless actions. A selfish action is, I want me to fix them. That's about ourself. By continuously performing perfect or selfless actions, I act for the benefit of the other person. Open my eyes, my life, to what is in their benefit. And in that way, a wise person influences others in all they do, because it's clear from our energy, from our eyes, from what comes out of our mouths, we are committed to acting for their benefit. When you are committed to acting for the benefit of someone else, the way human beings are constructed, the way we're constructed, once you have that commitment to act for their benefit, you don't even have to think very much about what you're going to do. It will come from you naturally, from your capitalist self, your peace and divine love inside. It will flow naturally from there because you've removed the barrier, which is yourself. This is, I want to do, I want to do. When you remove the barrier, then you perform selfless actions naturally, focusing on others' benefit. There are many beneficial reasons for acting selflessly, and Satchidananda is not going to talk about that. Selfless. And just notice how we're so naturally inclined to do selfish actions, but we don't call them selfish. I want to fix that person. It seems like we're being compassionate, you know. There's something wrong with them, and I want to fix them. It seems like, oh, we're just loving, helpful friends out fixing the world. No. Because the impulse comes from, I want to change them. I want to fix them. This is me and my calling. I'm here to. That's selfish. Selfless is just open yourself up to another person's energy and state of mind. With love, which involves respect and patience, spirit of generosity towards the other person, and compassion. Alright, let's see what Satchidananda has to say. He always has a lot to say. Suppose a small child asks his uncle, who is that man with something hanging around his neck?
Oh, I immediately thought it was skin.
A small child asked his uncle, who is that man with something hanging around his neck? Now I know what you're thinking. Not that.
Okay.
He's a doctor. The uncle says, he's a doctor. That's a stethoscope around his neck. Uncle, I want to be a doctor too. Buy me a stethoscope. I want to be a doctor. It's easy to copy. It's easy to copy. That's why teachers do things that actually there's no need for them to do. He's talking about himself here. That's why teachers do things that actually there's no need for them to do. Their actions aren't for their own sake, but to set examples for their students. to see how the selflessness is there, acting for the benefit of others observing you. Gandhi taught us this, didn't he? What did he say? Be the
change
you want to see in the world.
Yeah.
He said the same thing. Be the change. That's selfless. Here's Satchitananda says it too. There's no need for me to do... Oh, it's 5 to 11. We need to close for Jan and Gloria.
Or you can just let me sneak in.
No, no, no. We want to do a joint close together because we're all one here. We're all one. All right? So ask the good Lord to deliver 3 conscious breaths to you. And with a deep in breath. Sneak out.
Okay. Nobody will see you.
Bye, Jan. Have a good
one. Thank you. Do you want to sense some energy to go on a little bit, or shall that be our close for today?
I'm good. How about you?
Yeah. That's great. Especially the music in the
background.
Yeah,
let it be.
There's always more.
Yeah.
But isn't this interesting?
Yeah.
Teachers do things that actually there's no need for them to do. To set an example for the world. To be the change they wish to see. Set examples. And we are each and every one of us a teacher, aren't we? People around us look to us and they may resist us, but often they follow our example. Could be a heavy responsibility. And people are following our example. And if we let our actions flow, naturally, it's not a burden. And we are happy to act selflessly, let others experience our selfless energy, so that they can be drawn to selfless action as well.
Sometimes you can just hold space to allow people to feel safe enough to do whatever it is that they see.
Right. I love teaching this stuff because I need it.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
I had something happen to me just recently where my mind, I think for about a week, was going over these stories of how this was wrong, this was right, what I should do, what I shouldn't do. When I come in the presence of that person, this is what I should say, this is what I shouldn't say, mm-hmm. don't say, and so on. I knew when I would come in the presence of that person, or might. Sure enough, I came in the presence of that person, and I pretty much acted the proper way that I wanted to act in the beginning of the interaction, but that was the end of my plans, because then the person responded with a whole new way of looking at things, And I was able to be in the moment, as was, as Rev Russ's sermon was today, to experience what was going on, okay? Breathe through that, and just go to a different level of communication, and a different level of oneness with that person, effortlessly.
Nice.
So all my planning, a little bit was good in the beginning. I got off on the right foot. I didn't say, hey, I just want to mention that you're a jerk and you've done some good things.
Yeah, right?
You're
an idiot. Jerk.
You're an idiot. And then I started off with something respectful and kind, and that opened up a new space.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to check my mind later on the week and see if my mind still wants to go over that story. I don't think it's going to need to.
Yeah.
But it may want to. It may regurgitate the story and say, well, you could have done this.
You know, the underlying needs are usually the same, and it's probably just the need for connection between you and that person. And that's probably what you both needed. And then as soon as you let go of the way your strategy was going to be, your both needs of connection was there.
He had a need, this person, which I was not aware of. I was sort of aware of it. I touched on it in my wandering. But when this person spoke, his need became manifest. I saw, that's what he's needing. That opened up a whole new possibility for me to act in a selfless way and give space for that person to satisfy their need. Now I have something new to think about.
Right.
How can I open a space up for that person to satisfy their need while keeping everything in perspective and not breaking any boundaries?
Mm-hmm.
That's a wonderful new challenge.
Gift. Yeah.